This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. A debut novel being compared to The Handmaid's Tale tells the story of one mother's very bad day and how that day changes her life forever. Frida is a recently divorced mother of 18-month-old Harriet. Her husband's affair during the pregnancy resulted in him leaving for his young, goopish girlfriend. Frida is struggling. Frida feels alone. She moved to Philly for her husband. She feels like she's a bit of a failure. Her immigrant parents sent her to an Ivy League school, and now she's compromised her career so she can be with her daughter on her custody days. And it's just the two of them, and she is struggling on all fronts. One day, Frida does something she knows is not cool. She leaves the house for what winds up being 2 hours and leaves her daughter strapped into an exosaucer. Someone calls CPS, and Frida finds herself thrust into the court system and rushed off to a year-long residential program designed to reform, quote-unquote, bad mothers and make them good, which is where the story gets wild. The program is part rehab, part prison, part brainwashing farm, with very limited and strict ideas of what a good mother is. The women are forced to say, I am a narcissist and I am a bad mother. Frida is committed to doing whatever it takes to get Harriet back. But as the year wears on and things get weirder and more brutal at the school, she starts to doubt if she'll ever see her daughter again. The book is titled The School for Good Mothers, and it is the debut novel from author Jasmine Chan. It has already been optioned for a television adaptation by Jessica Chastain's production company, and we are delighted to speak with Jasmine now as part of our series, 22 Debuts. Nice to meet you, Jasmine.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Allison.
So you initially thought this was an extended short story. When did it expand?
Well, I have to admit that I have been a short story writer for much longer than I've been a novelist. So it's even very surreal to even be saying this out loud on live radio now that I am indeed a novelist. So thank you for that opportunity. And I was in the process of developing a short story collection. And so this book grew out of one very good writing day that I had in early 2014. And I thought it was just going to be a very complicated short story. But the big push that I received was from a teacher, Percival Everett, at the Breadloaf Writers Conference, who said, I don't want to make your life bad, but I think you have a novel here. And so that was the encouragement that I needed to pursue it as a bigger project.
Were you always interested in writing about motherhood?
No, I don't think so. Most of my short stories were about dating and marriage and divorce and relationships, much more chamber pieces with focused on two characters, a lot of couple stories. So I had motherhood on the brain in 2014 because I was heading into my late 30s and my partner and I were mulling over the question of whether or not to have a baby. So part of the project grew out of my intense anxiety and ambivalence about that decision and feeling a lot of pressure.
How would you describe Frida when we meet her?
Frida is a 39-year-old Chinese-American single mom. She is very sleep-deprived. She is struggling with depression and anxiety. She's pretty recently divorced and pretty new to being a single parent and very overwhelmed. Makes the decision to work from home so that she can see her daughter more rather than putting her in daycare, which would solve a lot of the inciting incident problems in the book. And so she makes a terrible decision. She decides to step out of the house, to be alone, to run this one errand. And that sets off a chain of events that changes her life and her family's life.
Yeah, Frida lands in this program, and because of this error in judgment, this lapse in judgment, although she does admit to just wanting to be alone for a minute, you write in the book, tonight again, Frida can't sleep. She needs to tell the family court judge that Harriet was not abused, was not neglected, that her mother just had one very bad day. She needs to ask the judge if he's ever had a bad day. On her bad day, she needed to get out of the house of her mind, trapped in the house of her body, trapped in the house where Harriet sat in her exosaucer with a dish of animal crackers. So that's pretty bad to leave your kid for 2 hours in an exosaucer alone in a home. How bad did you know you needed to make her transgression?
That's a really good question, because there was certainly some back and forth about that when I showed the early draft of chapter one to a writing workshop. And a lot of the feedback from that class was that I needed to make her more innocent so that she did something much easier to forgive, like leaving her daughter in the backseat of a car for 5 minutes while she runs into the store to pick her wallet up off the counter. Something like that, where clearly the innocent mom fights against the system. And to me, that wasn't as interesting of a story, because I wanted her to be truly messy and truly flawed, and to have to reckon with her guilt and her shame about what she did throughout the course of the novel.
My guest is Jasmine Chan. We're talking about her novel, The School for Good Mothers. So she gets to this school. I'm putting school in gigantic air quotes.
Right.
Some of the mothers are in for horrible abuses. There's a mom, you know, somebody put her kids, locked them away. But then there's a mom who let her kid walk home from the library by herself at like 9. And someone calls Child Protective Services, which is a story that got pulled from the headlines. I remember when that happened. How did you want to investigate how mothers are judged for their actions?
Well, I wanted to take some kernels of real life, such as the really broad range of offenses that fall under abuse and neglect, and make them insane in the world of the book for the purposes of satire. And I wanted to investigate how mothers are judged by looking at some of the problems with our government and our systems of power, but also talking about our larger culture, because I think it's part of a larger culture where there's this idea that there's one universal set of standards. But I wanted the book to call into question who is making those standards, and whether or not those standards are informed by our biases about race or class or culture.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because Frida seems to be one of the more well-off financially characters. A lot of the other moms are working class or poor, paycheck to paycheck. How did you want to examine race and class?
Well, I wanted to, as much as a novelist can do, gesture toward some of the demographics of the parents who fall under CPS surveillance and punishment in real life, without necessarily making broad claims, because I'm certainly not a sociologist or journalist or researcher. I'm just writing fiction. But I wanted to gesture towards some of the real life phenomena and hopefully draw a little bit of attention, as much as a book can, toward some of these problems, because it really surprised me, and perhaps it shouldn't have, how much race and class determines who is actually punished by the family court system.
My guest is Jasmine Chan. The name of the book is The School for Good Mothers. All right, let's talk about this training program you came up with. It's awful.
Sure.
It's terrible. It's cringy. The mothers are instructed in things like fundamentals of care and nurture, reconditioning the narcissist, socialization, dangers inside and outside the home. How did you come up with these classes and this training?
The crazy thing is that I came up with most of those lessons years before becoming pregnant. And it was more in response to things that bothered me about American parenting culture that I was hoping to examine or poke fun at or satirize in fiction. So it takes the idea from real life, which is that there are government sponsored parenting classes where you are taught things like how to speak respectfully to your child, how to manage your anger. And it takes that and makes it crazy. So I was taking the idea, which is partly based on a Rachel Levive piece, which also served as one of the inspirations for the project at the very beginning. And that article is called Where Is Your Mother? And it appeared in, I think, late 2013. And in that piece, the thing that struck me was that the way that the family court representatives and the lawyers and the social workers talked about parenting just all felt so clinical, almost like science fiction. And so I wanted to take the idea that things like affection or respect or attention or love could be measured. So it's taking the idea that that those things can be measured on a scale, and that parents can be held to an impossible standard.
Yeah, and it sort of takes a turn into science fiction. It's not too much of a spoiler to say that part of the coursework at this school, I'm going to try to say this without giving too many spoilers, is that the women there are given these lifelike dolls that are kind of like AI robots more than dolls. They speak, they learn, they misbehave, they challenge the mothers in the way little kids can. But the dolls are also recording them. The dolls are also,
right.
Which is completely creepy. How did you get the idea to include these hyper-realistic dolls in this training?
Well, this is not representative of what my writing life has been like, but the dolls, the women in pink lab coats, Frida's whole story, the backstory about her marriage, and basically the arc of the book was formed from that first day's drafting. So it's really the only time in my life that an idea has come to me fully formed. It, of course, took years to develop that into a novel manuscript, but the dolls were there from the very beginning. And I think that there was something that lodged in my brain from that New Yorker piece that definitely was just so chilling. And I think, however the imagination works, that turned to a sci-fi element in my book. The funny thing is that you mentioned about the dolls recording the mom's actions and their pulse and their eye contact. That is actually based on what our phones do. And my friend, the poet Keith S. Wilson, was suggesting, oh, these are the ways that the dolls could measure the moms. And he said, actually, your smartphones do this. So it's only a few steps beyond what's possible.
My guest is author Jasmine Chan. The name of her book is The School for Good Mothers. It's part of our 2022 debuts. I'm sort of interested in about, and I don't know, and please forgive me if I didn't catch this, but I didn't remember in the book anyone mentioning postpartum or postpartum depression. Was that intentional?
Well, I think Frida's depression is more just lifelong depression, not postpartum necessarily, but I did write a story about untreated depression and anxiety into the book, and it was partly based on my own experience because I received some bad advice before getting pregnant that I should go off my antidepressants in order to be 100% safe in terms of getting pregnant, and that resulted in quite a terrible mental health crisis that was terrible in real life but great for fiction in terms of being able to access those feelings. So I ended up writing more of a depression storyline and Frida's struggle with her mental health into the book as a result of that experience.
We need to talk about Frida's ex-husband, Gust, and his girlfriend, Susanna, who I described as being kind of goopish. I picture her as Gwyneth Paltrow-y in that kind of world. It's Susanna sort of decides to just step in and starts making all these decisions about their child. And the husband, the ex-husband, Susanna's boyfriend, really goes along with it. I was curious about the change in the husband and the world that you wanted to create for the two of them.
Well, I really enjoyed writing Gust and Susanna because they're very easy to hate, but it's also kind of difficult to hate them because they're really nice. And I wanted them to be the kind of characters that might knife you to death. Like their good intentions and do-gooder tendencies are just so smothering. So they were a way to poke some fun at wellness culture and this very intense form of American parenting where it's not just how much time you spend with your child and how much you love them, but also like everything has to be organic. They can only eat certain foods. They can only wear certain clothing. And to use that as a way to talk about how the focus on all natural everything can also be oppressive to women.
It's true. You know, it made me think that you chose the extra saucer for her, the kid, to be in on purposely because it's controversial in some parenting forms. I don't know if you've ever seen, there was an article at one point called, like, they called it the circle of neglect. If you put your child
Oh,
in...
I've, If only I had known this before the book was printed, I totally would have included that. But you know, the one thing you're saying about it was controversial in parenting circles is technically everything is controversial in parenting circles.
Exactly.
Like any choice you can possibly make. Like we let my daughter is now 5, but when she was a baby, we let her cry it out in order to do sleep training. That is a very controversial move. And like pretty much like everything, when you introduce solids, how much you talk to them during the day, like anything could be judged as bad or good.
And that's what's so sort of horrifying. There are many horrifying things about the School for Good Mothers, is the idea like there's just one way to be a parent. There's one way to show love. She is measured on how warm she is. Not all moms are warm and fuzzy. That doesn't mean you're a bad mom. But the idea that there were just these metrics she had to meet, I found so just, it was made me really upset and sad, I'll be honest.
Well, I've been describing the book as not the most relaxing read, but hopefully worthwhile.
So, oh, page turner. Page turner, 100%.
There are hopefully some laughs along the way, but it's definitely not leading with humor in terms of the way the book is being marketed. So there is some humor in there, but it's pretty dark humor.
I don't want to give anything about the ending away, but was it always that ending?
Yes. I did not start rewriting the book until I got to the very last scene, because I'm an editor by nature and in terms of all the jobs I've ever had. And I knew that once I started editing and tinkering with the actual paragraphs that I would never get to the end. So I wrote myself all the way to the end. And I certainly the version that I had in the first draft got revised heavily, but I knew where I wanted Frida to end up at the very end. But my friend Diane Cook, author of The New Wilderness, which came out a year ago, said that I could write an ending that would be like a gift to the reader. So I tried to stick with that ideal when I was developing the very last page.
You're having so much success with your debut novel. It was selected as the Read with Jenna Today Show Book Club selection, optioned for TV by Jessica Chastain's production company. What has it felt like to have your first novel in the world get this response?
Well, it's thrilling beyond belief. It's also kind of surreal because I have a small child who's only half vaccinated, so we live a pretty cloistered existence still. So I've been experiencing all this wild joy career-wise, but I haven't actually seen anyone. So I've seen my husband and daughter and my parents, and that's about it. It's both exciting, but also there's the strangeness of this happening during the pandemic when we're in semi-quarantine.
The name of the novel is The School for Good Mothers. It was part of our 2022 debut series. My guest has been Jasmine Chan. Jasmine, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here.